This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. It's Friday, May 31st. I'm John Wanamaker. The polarizing divide over the future of mining around Ely will be on display this weekend when an anti-mining group opens shop on the Canoeing Mecca's main drag. The new center will encourage tourists to take action against proposed copper-nickel mines in the region. Organizers see mining as a major environmental threat, but many in town believe it can be done safely and jumpstart the economy. Dan Crocker reports.
The new center is called Sustainable Ely. It sits just up the street from tourist shops like Mostly Moose and Looney's Northwoods Emporium. Becky Rahm, who grew up in Ely and retired here a year ago, is one of nearly 100 people who funded it.
As you go into the back room, you're going to see a beautiful Winona canoe.
On the shiny canoe are several signatures scrawled in black marker. The goal is to gather thousands more.
We hope to portage this down the mall in Washington, D.C., and present it to President Obama and ask him to protect the Boundary Waters watershed from sulfide ore mining.
About a dozen miles southeast of Ely, a company called Twin Metals has proposed a massive underground mine in an area estimated to contain more than $100 billion worth of copper, nickel, and precious metals. The company has been drilling in the region for years and is still in the mine planning stages. Rahm's husband, Reed Karen, says the concern is that when mines expose copper-bearing sulfide ore to air and water, acidic runoff could pollute the Boundary Waters.
I don't want copper mining to occur in what is truly a priceless water-based ecosystem. There are some places that you simply shouldn't extract copper.
But Twin Metals sits on one of the largest untapped copper reserves in the world. Nancy McCready, who runs a group called Conservationists with Common Sense, says you have to mine where the resources are.
For the last 100-some years, we have mined this area. Yeah, it was a different form of mining, but we have taken care of the environment.
Locals like McCready believe new technology and an exacting regulatory process will ensure that any mining project is safe before it proceeds. Mary Tomey is a Fall Lake Township supervisor just outside Ely.
I don't think anyone's going to let them open up if they can't be done safely. So I guess I get frustrated when I see efforts by people that are totally anti-mining.
Tomey lives on Farm Lake, downstream from Twin Metals. She doesn't own a well. She pulls water directly from the lake.
So where that water would run to, I drink it. And I'm not afraid of that.
Tomey and others also crave the hundreds of good-paying jobs new mines could bring. She says the empty storefronts and houses dotting Ely today didn't exist when she moved here 40 years ago.
Stores stayed open all year round. They didn't shut up the doors, you know, after Labor Day. And I think we really do need it. We need more people to come into town.
The mining debate in Ely has played out on the letters pages of the town's two weekly papers. It can get nasty, but locals say that's not necessarily reflective of the whole community. Canoe outfitter Steve Paragas, who purchased the house for the new mining center, says he's received mostly positive feedback. He admits mining was a boom for Ely in the past.
But it's always followed by a downturn, and it's the downturns that are hard to recover from. And tourism and retirement homes and all the other things that go on outside of mining are steady.
Ely's tourism industry is not only steady, but growing. Bill Forsberg owns Timber Trail Lodge. He's also past president of the Ely Chamber of Commerce. He says the city's lodging tax revenues have doubled in the past dozen years.
Tourism is definitely alive and well in Ely. So we have as many, if not more, people coming to Ely today to recreate and vacation as we ever have had before.
The question is whether that tourism economy can coexist with new copper-nickel mines. Forsberg doesn't believe it's worth the environmental risk. Twin Metals believes it can do it safely. Spokesman Bob McFarland says Ely doesn't have to take the mining company's word for it. The project will go through a rigorous environmental review that will likely last several years. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Ely.
The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has approved an exploratory drilling permit for a company looking to open a giant iron mine in northwestern Wisconsin, about 60 miles east and south of Duluth. Gogebic Taconite wants to dig a 4-mile-long open-pit mine in the Pinoki Hills near Lake Superior. Republicans earlier this year passed a contentious bill relaxing the state's mining regulations to clear the way for the company. Gogebic Taconite officials filed an application with the DNR earlier this month to drill 13 exploratory holes, but later scaled back the project to 8 holes. DNR officials say the company made the move after agency staff asked for more information about potential wetland impacts from possible improvements on roads leading to five sites. A cell phone video recorded the day of an officer-involved shooting in Minneapolis has touched off an incendiary allegation from an attorney representing the parents of the 22-year-old man who was killed. The attorney alleges police responding to the incident used racial epithets. The police department strenuously denies the charge and has demanded an apology. Curtis Gilbert has our report and a warning. This story contains offensive language.
The video was recorded on an iPhone across the street from the house where Terrence Franklin was shot and killed on May 10th. Two police officers were shot and wounded during the altercation, which is still under investigation. The minute-long clip shows officers running and yelling as word spreads that police were injured. The audio quality is poor, and the words are hard to understand. Here's what it sounds like. Those 4 seconds of audio are at the center of the dispute. Minnesota Public Radio was able to remove some of the background noise to make the voices somewhat easier to hear. Listen again. Mike Padden is an attorney representing Terrence Franklin's parents. He says he's confident he knows exactly what police officers are saying in those 4 seconds. A warning. The words he alleges were spoken are offensive.
It's our position that there are two significant lines that can be heard. The first one is, quote, "Watch out for the nigger," close quote. And the second one is, "Damn freaking nigger."
The Minneapolis Police Department says Padden's interpretation is false and, quote, "preposterous." In a written statement, Police Chief Janae Harto says nowhere on the recording does anyone use a racial epithet. What she hears is one officer asking for a tourniquet and another officer responding, quote, "I've got a tourniquet right here." Here's the audio again. Harto says the officers in the video include Minneapolis police and Metro Transit officers. She says she reviewed the video with Metro Transit Police Chief John Harrington, and he agrees with her assessment. The cell phone video was captured by Jimmy Gaines. He was in the neighborhood to visit a friend when he heard police start yelling that an officer was shot. He didn't hear anyone use the N-word.
I did not hear that, but you also have to realize, like, it was a very intense situation. There's a lot of radio chatter, a lot of cops yelling. I mean, a lot of stuff was going down in a short time.
Gaines has since listened back to his recording over and over again, cranking up the volume. And he's still not sure what the police are saying.
I definitely can hear something where that could be construed as being that word or mistaken for that word.
The Minneapolis Police Department has asked Mike Padden, the attorney who made the allegation, for an apology. They say, quote, "When false allegations are made, it negatively impacts the community and damages public trust." Activists from the African American community have scheduled a protest march today in downtown Minneapolis. Their concerns go beyond what was or wasn't said on the video. A flyer advertising the protest says Franklin's death is, quote, "consistent with the way blacks are treated in the Twin Cities." Organizers want the officers involved prosecuted.
That's reporter Curtis Gilbert. Hennepin County will begin accepting marriage license applications from same-sex couples on June 6th. Minnesota's same-sex marriage law takes effect August 1st. Hennepin County Registrar Mark Chapin says the state requires a 5-day waiting period before couples can get married, but the county attorney has advised that they can begin taking marriage applications as soon as the county is ready.
In the case of a same-sex couple, they make application prior to August 1st, their license will actually say August 1st on it rather than 5 days from the date they apply, just because that's the prescription in the new law.
Chapin says Ramsey and Washington counties will also allow same-sex couples to apply for marriage licenses beginning June 6th. This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. A state agency is launching a year-long effort to put a face and a name to unidentified human remains collected in Minnesota over decades. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension has been awarded a National Institute of Justice grant to test about 100 samples of unidentified human remains for DNA. BCA Lab Director Catherine Knutson says the samples were collected from the 1970s to the 1990s when DNA testing wasn't standard practice.
We need family members who have missing individuals to come forward and to make sure that their samples are on file. We're very fortunate that we do have what we believe to be the full contingent of what was located, and they are being stored appropriately in a medical examiner's office until we can do the examinations that are needed to get their DNA profiles into the database.
Knutson says if the lab can't match DNA from unidentified remains to living family members, the DNA profile will be put into a federal database for future comparisons. Target's Beauty Concierge program, which is already up and running in Chicago and Los Angeles, will debut at 36 Twin Cities area stores in July. The company is betting on a service that's rare for discount retailers. Martin Moylan has more.
Target says participating stores will be staffed by a brand-agnostic beauty enthusiast who'll provide personalized information about makeup and other personal care products. These are employees who are not paid on commission. They will wear a distinct black apron and be located in the beauty aisle. The advisors will also carry iPads so they can look up additional information. Erica Winkles is a Target spokeswoman.
Guests have really told us that they need help. They want that one-on-one personalized connection and that help in what is oftentimes an intimidating department. So we're really looking to step up that individualized service.
The program is also expanding to the Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and Northern Virginia area next month. 200 Target stores will have beauty consultants as of this summer. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And Minnesota has long been home to the headquarters of big companies like Target, leading to a flourishing Twin Cities advertising production industry. But as Rupa Shenoy reports, some modeling and casting companies say they've hit a hurdle that's causing them to lose business.
All right, Paula.
Paula Cardenas poses for the cameraman and smiles. She's wearing an apricot-colored top and cropped khaki pants for a catalog shoot at Quad Photo in Minneapolis. When Cardenas left Columbia for Minnesota 9 years ago and got into modeling, she thought the Midwest would be a quick stop before really pursuing her ambitions somewhere like L.A. But she ended up getting married, having a son, and staying.
I mean, I have heard that in other markets, in New York or Europe, they're really mean people and treat you bad.
What?
But no, over here people is really sweet. And I think it's a more relaxed market. It's not like that high fashion.
Still, the Twin Cities advertising production industry keeps Cardenas busy. By her count, she's one of four metro area professional Latina models.
I know sometimes they call me only because they need the Latin, but there is a Latin growing population, and of course they have a buying power.
That growing population wants to see people who look like them in commercials, and advertisers know it. Alicia Thompson is a producer with Quad Photo. She says advertisers request a Latino actor or model about three-fourths of the time. Thompson tries to fill those requests by going to the 20-some casting agencies in the Twin Cities.
I prefer to book local models, to have models that can come in from Minnesota or, you know, Iowa or Wisconsin even. So if we can't find the Hispanic look that we want in Minnesota, we have to go elsewhere.
By going elsewhere, Thompson means going to an out-of-state agency that can send in a model from another region, often at a higher cost. That means a Minnesotan misses out on a job that pays at least $188 an hour, and a local casting agency misses out on a roughly 20% cut. Deborah Rosenberg-Charloff says her business sometimes can't meet requests for diverse faces because they don't have enough. Rosenberg-Charloff is owner of the nearly 25-year-old family business Karen Model and Talent Management.
We can fill the projects if they're in a smaller scale, but if they need like a ton of choices, then it gets more difficult.
Rosenberg-Charloff says part of the problem is often she only has a few days to gather people for a casting audition.
We don't have a lot of time. So that's why if we have a ton of choices of people on file, then it's easier.
But they don't have many choices, at least for now. Lucinda Winter, executive director of the Minnesota Film and Arts Board, says the state is in a transitional period. She says the industry here is still learning how to reach out and build new networks into Latino and Asian communities.
I think there's no question that there's some really diverse talent here that would be interested in engaging in the arts as actors and models. I think the challenge is in trying to figure out how to most effectively get the word to those people that these opportunities exist. And I'm not saying that in a critical way. It's a business challenge.
And Lynn Steele of Steele Casting says without being approached, most normal-looking people don't think of themselves as models. Steele recruits people by haunting places like grocery stores and malls with her business card in one hand and a write-up of the ad she's working on casting in the other, so people will think she's for real. But she hasn't had much luck.
They're leery. Maybe people don't trust it.
So Steele recruited the help of a priest at a South Minneapolis church with a large Latino congregation.
He was so great and so into it and said, "Great, come in on a Sunday. I'll introduce you after Mass." And, you know, so I brought my camera and audition forms and took a bunch of photographs of people. My problem there was a lot of people didn't have transportation to even come to an audition if I needed them to.
And Steele says people also didn't have time to wait for hours at auditions without getting paid. Model Paola Cardenas couldn't even recruit her own sister.
But she doesn't commit that much. You have to commit, you have to keep testing, sending new pictures. She's busy doing other stuff.
If people have enough dedication to work hard and succeed in modeling, Cardenas says they usually move to places like L.A. and New York.
That's reporter Rupa Shenoy, and the Minneapolis Institute of Arts will be presenting an exhibition of contemporary works on paper by major artists this summer. The exhibit opens July 14th and runs through September 1st. Featured artists include Roy Lichtenstein, Jim Dine, Chuck Close, and Jasper Johns. That's the NPR News Update for Friday, May 31st. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.